Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das.
I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome to TechCetra. We are celebrating International Women's Day this week. We are joined by a very special guest with us as well. NS Napinai, Senior Counsel at the Supreme Court of India and founder of CyberSathi. Welcome Napinai to the Mint TechCetra podcast. Of course, we are going to hear about your journey in the entire tech ecosystem and being a forefront figure, not just in tech, but also the tech regulatory and legal ecosystem. But before that, I would like to share a little bit of an anecdote with you. You see, last week when Leslie, Deepthi and I recorded our podcast, right after the recording, we were discussing about how do we go about next week's podcast wherein we wanted to have a guest. We were also considering probably a series of interviews and having guests over. And there was a phase of 10 minutes in between that recording where all the three of us sat in silence, scratching our heads, wondering whom do we call that would represent the women in India's technology ecosystem. And we realized after a certain point that there had been 10 intervening minutes and we hadn't found a single name. And that got us a little bit concerned that this is 2024 and we are yet to find a direct answer or a top of the head top 10 list in terms of leading women in the technology ecosystem. So Napinai, I'd like to hand it over to you since we'd like to hear more from you this episode in terms of your journey as well as what you feel about where we stand.
Thank you, Shovik. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And yes, it was a lonely road to begin with when I started off in technology law. So I'm talking about something as far back as around 1995. So I started practice as a criminal lawyer and a practitioner specializing in intellectual property rights. So predominantly in initial days, I was dealing with a lot of copyright and trademark cases. So it was my journey in copyright cases that led me to technology law. Because at a time, and I'm talking about 94, 95, when nobody had heard of or knew enough about software licensing, I was dealing with cases at that point of time. And that's what led me to read up. And you have to remember, in those days, you can't read and learn in a click of a button. You have to go sit in a library for you to learn. And that's what I did. And you can't even use local libraries. You'll have to rely on the, the embassy or council libraries like the British Council or the American Embassy Library, etc. But that was also an interesting phase. Between 95 to 98, you saw a lot of evolution in terms of cyber laws. You had model laws coming out and data protection laws coming out across multiple jurisdictions. Invariably, data protection laws actually led the fray. It's very intriguing that it took India till 2023 to reach there, considering one of the first laws that India contemplated was a data protection law. Then we moved on to an e-commerce law, and thereafter we landed with the Information Technology Act in 2000. So my journey actually began before the Information Technology Act for India, and it continues till date. And I can tell you it's been an extremely exciting, interesting and intriguing journey. From a time when people would joke about me saying, if Napinai relied only on technology law, she would be starving. To now, technology becoming a very sexy word. How should I say, technology law becoming a sexy phrase?
That it is. So, Napinai, I had a really interesting question, to pose to you. And more than Shovik and Leslie, that question, the fact that we couldn't find, someone off the top of our heads immediately hit me quite hard. So, here are some numbers, right? According to an IAM or AIM research, women make up only 29% of India's tech industry. And this share keeps dropping as you go higher up, you know, in hierarchy. Women, especially in leadership roles, only make up for like 8% today. So why does this happen? And why can't women get past the glass ceiling? And what can they do to establish themselves in a leadership role?
You know, the first thing I would say is we have to take charge. Forget about blaming the world for it, right?
Yeah.
So the first step is from our own side. How much do we respect what we do? And where do we consider ourselves? You know, where do we position ourselves? So I'll tell you why I'm not blaming the victim here. I'm just explaining the way I looked at it, you know, for the better part of my life. And please don't laugh at this, but because I'm very serious about it.
Yeah.
You know, I literally had nothing I did was based on gender. So I call it gender obsolescence, because in my mind, I have never thought gender about anything I did. Imagine in my time thinking about practicing in criminal law, insisting on practicing criminal law and specializing in that, right? Imagine taking up intellectual property rights at that time and then technology laws. These are otherwise not considered as typical subjects for women. Right. The reason why I took it is not because I was breaking any glass ceilings. It was just my passion and I just did it, you know?
Yeah.
So gender obsolescence sometimes actually helps you overcome gendered problems. The second thing, and this is something I spoke about in my TEDx talk, and I keep telling people, everything you hear there is very raw, but very real, 100% real. And I've gone through that journey, and therefore I'm able to share this with you today. We all think invisibility is a virtue. To rethink this. Invisibility is not a virtue. Being low profile is not a virtue. You are being modest is just you playing your capabilities down. So it's not something you should be proud of. I used to go around telling everyone, oh, modesty is my middle name, as if it's something to be proud about. Who gained by me being so invisible that most of the world would not know about NS Nappanai? And I always joke about this, saying that if Shovik and Leslie thought about me in the top five or as the very first person, it is not because of what I did, it's in spite of what I've done. Because I have tried so hard to be invisible that I used to get worried if somebody talks about my visibility. It took me a long time to overcome this. That's why today also, if somebody asks me to talk about myself, there will be that momentary hesitation and resistance. And when I spoke about this in my TEDx talk, there was a room full of people near tears. And I'm not exaggerating this. So many of them then came to me, and these are people from 60s, people in their 60s to people who are in their 20s. Some teenagers also who came and spoke to me about how every single one of them was facing this problem. So why I'm saying that, you know, forget about what the world has done to us or will do to us or is doing to us. First, let us talk about what we are doing to ourselves and try and overcome that, because that's within our control. What is within our control if we don't deal with? How are we going to deal with the rest? So why I'm saying this is statistics can be very misleading. There are many women in technology, and I'm talking about hardcore technology. Many leading the STEM industry, many leading now in technology law. But they are not visible. They are not out there. And, and I was not visible also for many decades, because of my craving for invisibility. So it's like, you know, it's not that women are not there. It's just that they are not visible enough for us to know that they are there. And therefore the glass ceiling also. If you're not visible, how are you going to be considered
breaking
the glass ceiling?
It's very interesting that you said it, because I was just recollecting and smiling to myself, you know, the panel discussion that we had in IIT Bombay.
So obviously, I mean, for Shovik and Dipti, this was almost, and for the listeners, this was almost more than a decade back. And on the panel,
two decades back.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, and in fact, you know, nobody should talk about technology at that point in time. And we were talking about, I think, open source software. I don't remember the conversation very distinctly, yes. But I do remember the panelists very distinctly. And I won't name the person, obviously, but a very loquacious gentleman out there, and who was anything but a gentleman, because he was dominating the discussion. And I usually, I think as a moderator, I'm pretty proficient out there, where I know how to, you know, sort of, you know, manage a kind of a crowd like that. Yeah. But that day, my work was, you know, made very easy, because I had Napanay also on the panel. And Napanay put that gentleman in place so with so much ease. It's like literally we all had a hearty laugh at it, because that person was known. He had a record of, you know, dominating discussions and just absolutely monopolizing any kind of conversation and having an opinion on every subject under the sun. But it was good fun. But that, you know, sort of gave me the insight into the visibility and invisibility part of it. And we, I would say, as a like those of our listeners who are like women, you know, entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs and all. Remember, I mean, just unsolicited advice from journalists is that we seek you out only if you're heard. Because there's no other way of us knowing whether you're good or bad unless we look at your videos, unless we look, look at the posts or the tweets, formerly tweets on X that you put out, or, you know, the conversations that you have. Because how else would we really know, unless you're a friend or something, that, you know, you have those kind of deep insights that would make a difference. So, obviously, because I had heard Napanay in person, it was easy for me, you know, to seek out the next time for a quote. And that's how, of course, over a period of time, I would dare say that we became friends and we started trusting each other more. And it's that's how relationships and networks are built.
Yeah. You know what, Napanay, I must tell you at this point of time, Leslie schooled me one day. He just took out one day from his busy schedule right in the middle of the week. He schooled me for an hour. He's like, why aren't you there? Why aren't you out there? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? Now I know where all of this comes from. And thank you so much for being that source. I think, Shovik, you're trying to say something.
So great. What I found the most interesting about this is that, you know, we keep speaking about being heard. And I remember the first time I heard a Women's Day debate was probably back when I was in school. And the topic was very similar, leading women in India's corporate world. And this was sometime in the 2000s. So the panel was by a set of five men who was speaking about how women should be represented, you know, in the world. So I remember as a school kid sitting, and we were all supposed to compulsorily attend it. And I remember sitting and thinking that, isn't this a little funny? You know, shouldn't they have had at least one woman? And I remember I went back home and I asked my father. My father used to be a lawyer. And I asked him that, you know, this is what happened. And he's like, huh, no, I agree with you. But, you know, even in our sort of bar council library, we have one woman who's a lawyer. And the rest, about 140 of us, are like men. So maybe they just didn't find somebody. Maybe the schedules didn't match or something. And I was like, This is weird. But that the fact that there was a room where there would be 140 men and just one woman, that kind of sounded very daunting to me. So probably my question is a little cliched, but did you, Napanay, at any point of time feel these challenges, feel these sort of roadblocks in terms of, you know, these kind of things, a panel on Women's Day being represented only by men, or a room of 150 men and one woman?
I'm sorry if I sound a little contrarian, but you know what? Ignorance literally is bliss. And I was most of the time completely ignorant about whether there were more men in a room than women, what the men were thinking. You know, did they think it was something strange that there was just one woman in the room? I told you, gender obsolescence is how I lived. And that obsolescence extended to being completely indifferent to the men around me. So when I say that, I don't mean to be rude about them. It's just that, again, just a small lesson I'd like to share, and it happened to me naturally, and I'm eternally thankful for that. And you're absolutely right. When Deepthi was reading out statistics, I was tempted to tell her, you may want to dig into legal statistics.
Mm.
So let me start with the most recent incident. So recently, you know, you mentioned in your introduction about me being a senior counsel. I was recently designated as a senior counsel by the Supreme Court. 11 of us, 56 people were designated, out of which there were 11 women. The interesting part of that statistic is, in all the years of the Supreme Court, there are only a total of 23 women who have been designated. And out of that, 11 is now. So the question may arise about, you know, the numbers. It's not like good practitioners amongst women were not there before. It's just that probably we are being heard better now. And what made me feel very happy was, there is always an apprehension in each of our mind that we may not be playing the gender card, but someone else may just attribute it to us. So the first day after my designation, when I went to the Supreme Court, I was a little apprehensive, and I also cautioned myself to be mentally, you know, just be moderate and not react to somebody saying something probably about it being a gendered thing. And I must say, I'm eternally grateful to this gentleman who was literally one of the first to come and congratulate me. And not only did he congratulate me, he then introduced me to about 5 or 6 men. Like you already said, there is no dearth of men in the courts, right? So he turned to all the crowd of men around him. And you know what he said? He said, you know what? She just got designated, and she has got designated because of a specialization in cyber laws. And I must tell you, this is not about men or women. As far as I know, and as far as I can tell, she's literally the best, you know, in this field. And I trust her on this subject. So I was so happy to have started that way, where someone understood that it wasn't because we are women that we were selected. Each one of us has a specialization for which that recognition has been vested. So when we talk about gender and we talk about disparities, we are trying to catch up in a race where we are way behind. So sometimes this leg up kind of, you know, where 11 women out of 56 were recognized are needed. And I can only quote Ruth Bader Ginsburg here when she was asked about, when do you think you would see gender parity on the US Supreme Court? So would you expect 50% of the Supreme Court judges to be women? And would you feel then you have gender parity? She said, why stop there? Why can't all 9 be women? You know, and then when the person who was interviewing said, but would that not be a disparity again? She said, you never thought about it as disparity when all 9 were men. So why should you think that it is unequal when it is all women? So you can always equalize it later, right? So I think now the time has come for us to stop talking statistics, stop talking percentages, and think human. If it is a position for a human, just give it to a human who is most worthy. Don't worry so much about gender. And at some point of time, if some leg up is being given, I'm not for reservation. I've never been. I've totally batted for merit. And I find it extremely, excruciatingly painful if somebody thinks something has happened merely because of some kind of a percentage count. But having said that, if there is a necessity somewhere where you want to give proportionate representation, so be it. Mm-hmm. But at some point of time, the goal should not be to perpetuate, percentage-wise representation. The goal should be, again, my batting today is for gender obsolescence. You know, ignore gender and go with just, you know, a non-gendered basis. Because if we don't do that, today we are talking about binary genders. Even with binary genders, we are talking about 50% not getting sufficient representation. Imagine if we open it out to non-binary genders. How long is it going to take for us to get equality then?
Yeah, yeah. I totally understand. And I raised my hand right there because I do identify as non-binary, right? But Napina, you spoke about apprehensions and you spoke about humanity. And you also spoke about, you know, how sometimes it is the world that, you know, makes you feel that thing about your gender, that, oh, you are a woman. So this is, you know, the next question is, with regards to that, we hear stories of women, you know, in the spotlight, falling victim to exploitation via technology. Alia Bhatt, Sarah Tendulkar, Katrina Kaif, Kajol. I hope you know where I'm going with all of this. Two deep fakes, right? So there are, but there are also a countless number of women who have been regularly, you know, whose lives have been destroyed because of morphed pictures ever since Photoshop time. You know, it's not just about deepfakes, right? So what precautions can women take to prevent this from happening? And if it does happen, how can they hold the perpetrator accountable?
Yeah, a very pertinent question, Deepthi. So let me just start off with the first thing that I have noticed, whether I was handling a case or talking to a victim, etc. It is about blaming themselves. Each one of us, for that matter, you know, if a sexual attack, a sexual offense, be it sexual harassment or something worse happens to us, automatically we start blaming ourselves. And I think it's too important that we stop doing that. More importantly, you talked about the issue of what is the stand that women should take and about how we have to be responsible to ourselves. On that note, I would actually want to emphasize the fact that it is not just about being responsible to ourselves, but also being responsible to society. Remember, if somebody has committed a crime against you, that person is not going to stop with that. They will definitely continue to perpetuate that crime. And because of your silence, somebody else also gets victimized. So my first earnest request to all listeners will be, please take recourse of law, file your complaints, make sure that prosecution is initiated and the perpetrator brought to book. Because only if we show that law is successful, it can act as a deterrent. Otherwise, everybody will think I can do anything and I can get away with it. The next thing is this casual resort to this excuse that a crime that has been committed on a woman or a child was just as a prank. Nothing is a prank, and certainly morphing pictures, creating deep fakes, etc. is not just a prank. When you create fake imagery or manipulated imagery, as it's called in some jurisdictions, and that is also sexually explicit, you certainly don't mean it just as a prank. Remember, and I'm talking about two instances from the South, and I'm juxtaposing one with the other. In one instance, this girl, young girl, whose imagery was morphed and was circulated in WhatsApp. And the problem when it's circulated in WhatsApp is it goes to your immediate family and friends. It's not just on the internet and going to some nameless, faceless person. And when it goes to your immediate circle, the shaming element is much higher. And probably that's what the perpetrator also intends. Often these kind of cases are done either to shame the victim or for, you know, the depraved, you know, intent that the perpetrator has. In one case, when we filed prosecution and the police finally took action after a lot of delay, unfortunately, more than 100 sexually explicit, manipulated or deep fake or morphed imagery was found. So this is something that's actually just to satisfy a depraved mind. Right? So these kind of things keep happening. The reason I told you about two cases is the first instance where this young girl's imagery was circulated on WhatsApp committed suicide. She lost her life to something which the perpetrator may not even have thought of as a consequence. On the other hand, in another case which is called as the Pollachi sexual scandal, and I don't think it's a sexual scandal, it's a series of sexual offenses, was brought to light because a girl was bold enough to say, you know, the brother was the one who found out that the phone of the perpetrator had more than one recorded video. In that case, it was not of manipulated imagery. It was of recording after forcibly violating a girl. And this was in the case of multiple ladies, not just girls, okay? And everybody had kept silent. So this brother then tells this girl that this is the situation, what do we do? And she says, no, we go ahead and file the case. And thereafter, within less than a week, police found nearly more than 50 such instances, 50. Imagine how many more they would have found out thereafter. So, you know, that many victims have been victimized because everybody kept silent.
So basically, speak up and you will figure out a way to protect yourself.
Make the law work for you. You know, I agree that many times law may not work for you. But if you don't even try, how do you blame the law for it?
Right. So, Napinay, in your entire years of experience and decades of experience as a lawyer, you know, of course, there have been the serious sides and the concerns that we've all, of course, raised and asked and answered. But, you know, what I'm looking for are bloopers, essentially, which come behind a TV show where there are funny incidents which might seem humorous later. You know, encounters with, you know, people that you might have encountered over the years. Why don't you share, you know, an anecdote or two in terms of these experiences that you might have had through the years?
It's interesting that you're asking me this, Shovik, because one of my biggest grouses is that, you know, humor in courts unfortunately seems to have been affected over the years. You know, when I started practice, I've seen so much of humor in courts. Of course, actually starting with college. Let me give you this really fun anecdote, which is how my journey into law started. Believe it or not, and my friend, if she's listening to this, is going to kill me for this. But her name is actually Lousy, Lousy. Okay. And we walk into law college. Seriously, I'm not joking. And she's going to kill me for this. But we walk into law college. And then she introduces herself and the senior lawyer. Probably they were thinking of ragging us. They didn't even need anything else for, you know, to start the ragging. But they were so polished and, you know, there was so much finesse in what they did. So I loved it. So he, one of the seniors replies saying, is that a pronoun or an adjective? You know, so that's what law meant for us, you know, fun and very subtle fun at that, in terms of, the way we function. So contrary to perception, we are not boring. We are not like, you know, so sober that we don't know how to take a joke on ourselves. One of my favorite books I bought just for the title, and I have it prominently displayed in my office, the revolving rack, is Dracula Surely Must Have Been a Lawyer, you know. And I'll close off with just another anecdote on this. So there were three lawyers standing and chatting, and someone came there, and one of the two men and this girl was there. And apparently the male was trying to introduce each of them. And then he said, I am so-and-so. I am in criminal law. He is so-and-so. He is in civil law. She is so-and-so and she is in labor. That took a minute.
You lost it.
My God.
Shovik, you don't tell me you didn't get that.
Or rather, we lost the audio after we got the joke, whichever way you want to play it.
Yes.
Oh, God.
My God.
So, you know, a lot of humor at a certain point of time was seemed to be very sexist, which we look at now. You know, a lot of people have spoken about the TV show Friends, even though, you know, Friends is sort of therapeutic for a lot of people. Many have underlined that there are these jokes which are extremely sort of, you know, male-oriented, so to speak. And general humor till a certain point of time seemed to have been sexist, for the lack of a better word. Or perhaps this is the right word. Nabina, your take on this. Do you feel that jokes should have till a certain point been considered as just jokes, or do we have a responsibility to be more appropriate and more accountable even when we consider ourselves to be just, you know, letting our hair down, or at the end of a tired day at a bar and so on?
See, you will come across a lot of sexist jokes, and you're right. It can even be personal sometimes. It's not always only a third-party joke, meaning it's not always just couched as a blonde joke or XYZ kind of joke, right? So it is personal also. I think it's really difficult for us to generalize, however, and we can't also straitjacket it. So, for instance, I have done a lot of sessions for, the Sexual Harassment Act, and I must put it out there, I hate the acronym POSH Act. Nothing posh about it. So I always call it the Sexual Harassment Act. And you have to have a lot of, every year you must do some awareness programs, etc. And sometimes I get invited for that. So once the reason I'm bringing this up is you're all from media and you will relate to this. So one of the questions that I was asked, and this was for a media house, I was by a girl who said, oh, they use all these swear words in the editorial room. Should we take affront? So I said, do you use them also? She said, yeah, of course we do too. I said, then what exactly are you complaining about? So I'm not saying it's okay to use swear words. I'm also not saying it's not okay to say it. Sometimes we have to contextualize it. Often what happens is we don't do that. And when it suits us, we take affront and say, oh, we are not comfortable with this. Or at some other time, we are also laughing along. But the worst thing is when you laugh along because you want to pretend to be cool. And I've seen this a lot amongst youngsters. So all I would say is if you're not comfortable with something, say so. Don't hide behind the so-called coolness. Don't think somebody will think you're being a prude. It doesn't matter if they think that too. Eventually, everybody forgets and moves on. So say it, because at some level, somebody would have noted you're not comfortable with something and they will know which is the line not to cross. And don't misuse this power in your hands to call out someone. Use it wisely.
Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Please. Before we conclude, one question I would surely want to ask you is, you spoke about visibility and invisibility at length, and your own, you narrated your own experience, how it matched with the invisibility part of it, how you now are becoming visible and how more women should become visible. Having said that, there's also this whole school of thought that, more women should be trained at the school levels in STEM, especially in STEM, when we're talking about science and technology, because perhaps women are not very fond of science and maths. I do not know whether that really has there any evidence to back that. But of course, it's a lot anecdotal to my sense. But what is your sense on this? Because you have proven yourself in the field of technology.
Yes, and I will take this opportunity to disagree on this aspect about women not being comfortable in science or maths, because almost a higher percentage of my classmates in school were extremely good in science and maths. I would like to place myself along with them, and I know I don't qualify. They were that good. So I think it's both ways. One, when you're talking about science and technology, it's quite honestly irrelevant what your gender is. You can still launch that rocket irrespective of your gender, right? This is not like heavy labor work where you may want to delineate. And even over there, it's now becoming mostly neutral. So the issue is one about opportunity. But there is again also, the reason I'm focusing on internalizing our problem is because often we just blame the world And we also use that as a crutch to not even try. So before we talk about the world and what it does to us or doesn't do for us, we have to create our own opportunities or seize opportunity when we see it. The only thing I'll want to add is this. You know, women are totally capable of getting into STEM. But the most important point I wanted to spotlight, because I'm seeing this trend even amongst youngsters today, is they give up too easily. They have started, they have really slogged and come to a very strong position. And anywhere between 10 to 15 years into the career track, suddenly you see them dropping out. Suddenly you see them questioning themselves in terms of, am I doing the right thing? Have I compromised family for this, etc.? And a lot of this also stems from social engineering. So Leslie, to answer your question, it is not just about STEM that I would want, learnings to start from school. It is also the social engineering that is geared into us from the time we are born to be unlearned. So from school, children have to be taught, each of you have equal opportunity, each of you have equal responsibility and duty, right? To take care of yourself, to take care of your family, take care of people around you, it is not one single person's job. Why are women assuming it is not their job to earn and take care of the family? If they start thinking like that, then automatically the rest of their concerns about, oh, am I not doing enough for the family, will be taken care of. It's not like every man who goes out and works thinks he's not doing enough for the family, right? Because they have treated that as their role. So now we are not talking about role reversal. We are also talking about role obsolescence here.
Right. I think I just to add to that, and then I'll be done, Shovik. is just that you can start anytime. I think I've always been afraid of math, science. All of these things have been very, very dready topics to me. Not because of my gender, just because of the way I grew up. I was just pushed into Mint, etc. And I'm enjoying my journey here, you know. And it happened just like that. And I just took up that opportunity. And so I completely agree with you, Napinai. And it starts with taking up responsibility for yourself. And then it can start anywhere.
Shovik, I think the challenge for you now as you conclude this episode is, so how do you connect it with the rabbit that the please really
I already have a strategy in mind, Leslie. So before we sign off, we have to thank you, Napinai, for taking time out for this and persisting with us despite all the network goof-ups. We have a lot of bloopers, in fact, from this episode.
Yes.
And that has made for perhaps one of the most interesting episodes that we've had of late. So once again,
literally and figuratively enjoyed this episode. So thank you all for this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And just before you sign off, Napinai, we have one particular interesting request to make. I am really not sure for our listeners. I'm really not sure why my co-host Deepthi Ahuja is pointing a finger at me. however, Napinai, there is this particular gadget called the Rabbit Arm AI Assistant, which my co-host Deepthi has been trying to purchase for the past around 8 weeks, Leslie.
Yeah.
Too much. And she has earmarked $200 and kept it aside to buy it. But she still hasn't. And she's been threatening us of late. We've been getting pretty serious life-threatening messages that if we do not stop asking her about it, she's going to soon take action. So what is the appropriate way for us to go forward in this situation?
I have a very simple answer for you. Deepthi is going to pay the $200 to me for this valuable opinion I'm going to give her. And that ends the matter, right?
Paid, but I'm not asking for this opinion. This is unsolicited at all ends.
This is actually unsolicited advice.
No, not at all. Shovik volunteered on her behalf.
No! Wait, this is not how law works.
Just that Deepthi is paying for it.
Absolutely. So, Shavik, the rabbit is in your hole now.
Clearly.
Rabbit holes, as you know, from Alice in Wonderland, are always journeys which are going to take you to places you never even imagined, right? So, Deepthi, so watch out if you're going to follow the rabbit.
I am on the lookout.
Right. And on that note, once again, thank you, Napinai. And as always, thank you, Deepthi. Thank you, Leslie. This was perhaps one of the most fun recordings that we've had of late. And thank you to our listeners as well for joining. And any kind of feedback, as we've made it a point to mention every week, even if you like what we've said or not like what we've said, do feel free to write to us on our email or on our social channels, which will be in the description. And that's it for this week. See you next time.
I think this entire episode is behind the scenes.
Sorry, yeah, but I mean, like, you know, we are trying to wind up and that's when I'm hearing ding, 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 dud, 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 and all that. So a friend of mine told me about this. Oh, damn. I'm just waiting for all the... Somebody doesn't like my sense of humor.
Dracula certainly was annoyed. Shavik, you really didn't get that?
No, I got that. I thought we lost her audio.
Ah, we got the joke. We lost the audio.
And before Deepthi and Leslie think that I did not understand the joke, guys, I did understand the joke.
You have to say it. You have to clarify.
We believe you, Shavik.
I understand the joke. I was just going to say that it's very interesting that we were talking about being heard. And the first instance that happened right after that entire session was that I was not heard. But anyway, I'm guessing I'm audible now.
Pull a rabbit out of your hat.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Etc. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.